First, membership in the middle class has historically been seen as a pretty comfortable life in the United States. People in the middle class could generally assume that they would have a higher standard of living than their parents, that investing in a good education would pay off, and that being able to afford to have a family would be a given. But our next guest says that has changed, and many in the middle class are facing a more and more precarious financial reality. Alyssa Court is the executive editor, and co-founder of the journalism nonprofit, the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. She's the author of several books, and her latest is called Squeezed, Why Our Families Can't Afford America. Alyssa, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, it's great. It's great to be on.
Well, you use the term middle precariat to describe the group of people that you're talking about, the people you talk to feeling pressure from all sides, feeling squeezed. How does that phrase, middle precariat, sum up the people you're talking about here?
So this is what I saw in my reporting and when I looked at the numbers. Middle class used to mean stable, right? Almost humdrum. It was a regular job with regular hours and maybe a pension. You weren't reaching for the stars, but you were secure. Now it often means unstable jobs. You're squeezed both in terms of your money and your emotions. It's not being able to live with dignity and security.
And this really gets bad, you say. People really feel squeezed after the birth of a child, starting with the expenses of the birth of a child. Can you talk about how that's starting to affect people?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just looking at the cost, literally, of labor around the world. And in the U.S., it could be $16,000 for a C-section, let's say. And then in other countries, it was something like $3,000. And just that. That alone was a real issue for many of the people I spoke to. If there was any complications, even when they had health insurance, they'd be in debt after giving birth.
And these costs for this middle class group, often on top of a lot of student debt already.
Right. So, yeah, student debt is piling up. It's leading to people reconsidering having children at all. You know, there was that new study by the CDC, the data that women were having fewer children than at any point since 1978. That's 1.76 children over their lifetimes, down from 2.1 in 2007. And that's right, of course, right before the recession. That's a key number, right? So I think people are thinking, I have all this student debt. I have, you know, some of the people I spoke to had $140,000 in student debt. You know, how are they going to pay that back and have two children or even one child and indeed pay for daycare and housing?
Right. You quoted one, I think one mom saying her long-term financial plan was to stop at one kid.
Yeah, exactly. Stop it. That was my family's plan as well.
And talk about how this weighs on people emotionally. And we'll talk a lot about the financial elements and the work and work-life balance elements here. But there's a lot of anxiety among the people in the middle class that you talk to.
Yeah, I think there's this worry about the future. You know, what's your life trajectory? So, yeah, I see squeezed as a financial phenomenon, but it's also a psychological and almost an existential one. Whereas, you know, these jobs, being a librarian or a teacher, professor, even a lawyer, used to have this regularity to it. Now it's sort of, what is going to happen? What, not only what's my old age going to look like, what's my middle age going to look like? Am I going to have, you know, money for vacations? Am I going to have money to pay for a mortgage? So it really changes the nature of how people see themselves. And that, of course, produces anxiety. It's also intergenerational. I think people, I've even at events I've done since the book has come out, people will stand up and they'll say things like, I was, you know, I tried to explain to my parents, you know, they're people in their 30s and 40s. They try to explain to their parents in their 70s what it takes to live a middle class life. And there's a real discrepancy intergenerationally.
Talking to Alyssa Court, author of the new book, Squeezed, Why Our Families Can't Afford America. And staying on the, I guess, the feelings side of this, Alyssa, a lot of feelings of guilt, that's an individual failing to not have the security, and blame, whether that's self-blame or blame of something else, someone else.
Yeah, so I think that was part of one of my readings of what happened in the election even in 2016, because I feel like some of the people I spoke to were blaming themselves, but I know that many people who were struggling or on that sort of edgy middle-class identity blame others. They blame immigrants, they're Islamophobic, and one of the things I hope to do with this book and just these conversations we're having and conversations I hope people start having is looking for system fixes, looking for the system problems of why people are where they're at so they don't blame themselves and they don't blame other groups of people.
Right. That's if there's a running theme in your book or many running themes, that's one of them, the idea that from the perspective of one person or one family, this is an individual personal problem. But when it's happening again and again and again, you say this is some kind of structural problem. There's something bigger going on than one person's life decisions.
Yeah. And people, the people I spoke to, you know, some of them I call the hyper-educated poor. You know, they have graduate degrees. They felt like they did everything right. And so they even know they're not supposed to be blaming themselves, you know, but they're like, what's wrong with me? You know, they'll just say that after, you know, a couple conversations, they'd say, you know, why am I not able to make this work? And that was very striking to me. And sometimes I'd want to pipe in and say, and sometimes I did, I said, there's nothing wrong with you, or you've tried the best you could, you know? And the right response to where they're at is rage and reorganization and trying to rethink why we don't have things like paid family leave and all the rest.
Let's talk about that. There has been talk about trying to expand paid family leave in the United States. First of all, how does the U.S. compare to other developed, if we want to call them that, countries when it comes to family leave?
Oh, absolutely terribly. I mean, For one thing, you know, if we're just talking about things like daycare, you know, I went to Montreal and it was daycare cost $7 to $20 a day versus in the U.S. where it was, you know, there are people who I spoke to were spending 30% to even 38% of their incomes on daycare. And then in terms of maternity leave, you have 14% of the American workforce that gets paid family leave versus, you know, in multiple other countries, weeks and weeks of paid family leave and pregnancy leave as well.
And another issue when it comes to childcare is predictability. If you work a predictable 8 to 4, 9 to 6, whatever schedule, childcare is one thing. If you're working different times a day, working overnight, all of a sudden 24-hour random access childcare becomes an issue. What are people doing?
So one chapter of my book, I look at what I call extreme daycare, and that's daycare that is happening in the evenings and on weekends and sometimes even overnight. And there was a study then that showed that today 9% of daycare services are being provided in these off hours, which would imply that people are working, you know, really strange clocks. I call them the forever clock. So it's like, you know, when do they stop working? When can they? How many jobs do people have to do to pay for to have kids in this country? I embedded myself in one of these 24/7 daycares, and it was fascinating because, I mean, the kids were great. It was a sweet place. There was nothing wrong with it, but, you know, they were picked up sometimes at 10 o'clock at night, or, you know, they were dropped off early in the morning, or their parents would come at various strange times during the day. And the reason that was happening was because they were given only a certain amount of working hours that were completely not thinking about the workers as human beings and parents. So they'd be given teeny little slivers of work hours, and then they'd have to drop their kids at daycare to make sense of those hours they were being assigned.
And you say there's a fundamental issue of us devaluing the role of caregiving in the United States, whether that's the parent themselves or, say, somebody works at a child care and is paid not much in maybe a very expensive city to live in.
Yeah. So one thing I hope also to get across is that we do need to reframe care. Right now, with the paradox is that so many parents are spending so much of their money on daycare, but then the daycare workers themselves are really struggling. So I try to represent their experience as well. I didn't want it to just be one of those like privileged mom books or, you know, struggling privileged mom books. I wanted to show the workforce that's actually propping up some of those parents too and how much they're struggling. So there's a real disconnect. I mean, obviously what we need are more universal pre-K. We need more subsidized daycare for people who are not under the poverty line, you know, who are just holding on. So this is something I saw a lot of.
We're talking to Alyssa Quart right now about her most recent book. It's called Squeezed: Why Our Families Can't Afford America. She's the executive director and co-founder of the journalism nonprofit, the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. You can join in at 800-642-1077. 1234. Is this you? Is this your family? Do you feel squeezed? What are the main issues for you having a hard time making ends meet, maybe even let alone getting ahead? How different has it been for you compared to, say, your parents' generation? Do you feel this guilt or self-blame for not being able to keep up maybe with the daily bills, the cost of childcare, housing, and more? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we pick up the conversation with Alyssa Quart. Her new book is called Squeezed, Why Our Families Can't Afford America. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel squeezed in your family budget, in your family time? Is it hard for you to find to afford, say, childcare? How are you balancing work, a family, and the costs associated with trying to have both? Call 800-642-1234. And are you in a situation where you are putting off or maybe changing your mind about having kids due to the costs associated with child raising? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Alyssa, another issue I want to get into is the cost of housing. We hear again and again about, okay, the communities that have great jobs, maybe middle class pay type jobs, are in places where the middle class can't afford to live in them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I talked to somebody who lived in the deep Midwest in an icy small town, and she was saying, "Oh, I'm not getting the work that, you know," she was a graphic artist. "I'm not getting the work I need out here, you know," and that's one of the prices that people pay. So then they start moving it to cities. They move to near San Francisco or New York if they're in any of these kind of creative or so-called, you know, professions, media professions, right? And then they can't afford the housing that goes along with it. One chapter of my book is about school teachers outside San Francisco and places like San Jose who drive Uber. They drive Uber after work and on weekends, and they're doing that because they're having trouble paying for their apartments. One-bedroom apartment in San Francisco averaged $3,500 a month. So that was, you know, he was driving his Uber instead of preparing his curriculum.
Let's go to our callers now. Carol is with us in Wausau. Carol, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Carol?
I just wanted to make the comment that as a parent and grandparent and someone who has worked all my adult life, that in having children and looking for daycare, that it certainly has been an issue both in availability as well as cost. However, I do want to comment that being a parent is a choice. And when you have children, one of your considerations should be, can I afford the cost of raising that child, including daycare and housing and all the other things that go with it? So, again, I am sympathetic to the issue, but I also would like to point out that parenting, being a parent and choosing to be a parent, has its responsibilities and the costs that come with it.
Carol, thanks a lot for that call. And Alyssa, that cost is changing, you write, and you write that a lot of people are making that decision now to maybe not have kids solely or mainly because of those cost issues.
Yeah, I mean, I do understand what the caller's saying, and I challenge some of the things that some of the people in my book, including myself, We were told, do what you love and follow your dreams as a worker. And these are things we need to start rethinking, and we need to start rethinking whether we go to graduate school, whether we do all these things and, you know, mount this debt before we have children. By the same token, I don't know how many of the people who, in fact, did do everything right, as it were, how they could do differently. I mean, they're spending every last dime on daycare and after school care in order to work, in order to support the family. So it's a vicious cycle.
Carol, thanks for that call. I'll go next to Margaret in Milwaukee. Margaret, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
What do you think, Margaret? What did you want to tell us about?
Well, I have a 4-year-old and I have an 8-month-old, and I can really relate to what you're talking about. our situation that we've experienced recently with my second daughter, I was on bed rest for 14 weeks. And that was totally unexpected. You know, we knew that kids were expensive, but, like, it was expensive in a different way because my husband had to quit his job to take care of us and hasn't really gotten back into the workforce since, even though he's been trying to. So, it's a really, really difficult time, and we're feeling that squeeze. We have lots of ways that we try to make money go farther, but it's been a real, real challenge, not just having little kids, but having little kids and having no money.
Margaret, thank you so much for sharing that story. And Alyssa, one of the first people you talk about in the book, they're in a situation, I think, where they say, you know, if everything goes just right and nothing goes wrong, we can get by, but there's always something that could go wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just thinking about the one small medical thing that goes wrong, and then your husband or your wife is forced to be a child, you know, both a child care and a spouse care provider. And that's where pregnancy leave or maternity leave is even more necessary, right? Because those things do come up. I mean, I was just going to say, for new parents in England, you get 280 days of, you know, parental leave at 90% pay. And Canada, 119 days at 55% pay. So, you know, I also had, you know, hyperemesis, which when I was pregnant, I was not in great shape after my daughter was born because I'd been sick for all those months, just like you. And so that those days of leave would sure have been come in handy.
Thanks for the call, Margaret, and good luck. We're talking to Alyssa Court, author of the new book, Squeezed, Why Our Families Can't Afford America. Back to your calls, Lee in Glidden. Lee, hi.
Hi. Mine's kind of a different thought on this. I consider myself a part of the middle class, lucky that I don't feel squeezed. But my observation has been that the problem goes deeper than this, and I think it goes down to Americans don't care about other Americans anymore. You know, why don't we have maternity leave and daycare and health insurance for everyone? It's because I don't want to pay more taxes because I got to have more for me. So in Europe, they're not doing that. They care more about the society.
Thanks for the call. Alyssa, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think there's a sense that we're supposed to take care of ourselves. It's a sort of ruthless individualism. And it's not just, you know, bootstrapping. It's also, you know, as women workers, we're told to lean in, right? And to take what's ours. And that's also individualistic. It's not thinking, how do we get together as a class, really, especially women as a class, and start to, you know, connect and talk openly about our situation and try to change things.
Lee, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Delia in Three Lakes. Delia, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a comment regarding a short maternity leave. It's only, unfortunately for my employer, it's only 3 months, so 6 weeks paid and 6 weeks is unpaid. And I'm originally from Russia. I know they give them about maternity leave. I chose to breastfeed my baby, and it was very hard because I worked as a critical care transport nurse, so couldn't really pump much when you're in the back of the ambulance with a patient. So very challenging to provide the best care for your child and try to maintain that salary.
Delia, thanks so much for sharing that. She mentioned breast pumping, and that's been an issue. You talk about women airline pilots trying to deal with this issue, Alyssa.
Yeah, I talked to a couple of people who worked in jobs where they were sort of there was no clean spaces for them to pump. They said, oh, you can do it in the bathroom, or were they sometimes set aside strange rooms off to the side in, say, in an airport, which didn't really answer the question. So that's a very parallel to your experience. And I mean, basically, there's not very much protection for these experiences. So they say, okay, go back to work. You know, you can pump in this, you know, in the bathroom, and that's just not really good enough. We need more pumping stations everywhere.
Thanks for that call. One issue we haven't gotten into that I wanted to touch on, Alyssa, is the risk of automation. And if this affects people working and middle class and a lot of jobs that people might not have thought could be automated. So again, as you say, if people do things right, their job might not exist anymore after a while.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's also going to affect women predominantly. There's a new study that showed that, you know, 57% of the jobs that are going to be lost are going to be female workers. And one thing that interested me was these were often middle class professions that were threatened by the robots. It wasn't just, retail work, which is already, like, if you go to supermarket, right, you may be checking it out with an automated checker. It was things like there's pharmacists, there's robot pharmacists, there's robots doing the work of lawyers, and yes, doing the work of journalists. They have there's a program called Automated Insights, which to me is an oxymoron, but and it's doing it's providing so-called, you know, content for news services like Forbes.
Very briefly, Alyssa, are people talking about these things beyond your book and the response to it?
I feel like people are starting to. I've been really happy to see articles. Like, there was a recent article in the New York Times about wages not keeping up. This is a moment of prosperity, but it's mostly corporate wealth. It's not wages, and prices are still really high. I just want people to refocus on what life is actually like on the ground for many people, and I don't know. I've been feeling optimistic. Also, there's a lot of new talk about universal basic income, which would be a certain amount that might be given to members of the population. That's being piloted in Stockton, California, and also in Ontario, in Canada. And I feel like that is now getting traction. It was, you know, Obama's mentioning it. Fox, it was on Fox today.
We'll have to leave it there. Thanks to Alyssa Quart. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Squeeze: Why Our Families Can't Afford America.